we've heard in one gigantic chapter reading of Putana, that great Rakshasi, man-eating, child-eating woman, who was actually a demon. And she was sent by Kamsa to kill all the children. And Krishna became actually quite angry at her because she had killed so many Brijvasi children. And he killed her. And then she assumed her real form, her actual form. Krishna remained just simply playing on her breast. She had come to kill him, and he ended up killing her. But Krishna is so kind that even his killing is merciful. This is the meaning of being all good. When we say that Krishna, in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, Param Satyam Dimayi, meditation upon the Param, the Supreme, or all Satyam, good, or truth, the absolute truth. But it also means that everything Krishna does is good. It may appear that something is bad, that something is better, something is worse, that he's being kind to someone and cruel to another. It appears possibly that he's cruel to Putana, but this is not at all the case. He is simply always good, and everything he does benefits. Krishna is so wonderful, actually. And he showed also that Putana couldn't maintain. She had put on the form, she had assumed the form of such a beautiful woman. So much so that all the residents of Vrindavan, even Mother Yasoda, were so captivated by her when she came. "Oh, you have such a wonderful child. Please let me feed him." And Mother Yasoda was so captivated by her, but she allowed her, who was then looking so beautiful, to breastfeed the baby. But then, when Krishna was sucking the life, her life in her breast, she couldn't maintain that beautiful form, and she assumed her original form. But on the other hand, Krishna, who was in a baby form, he maintained that baby form. It is effortless for him to kill thousands and thousands and millions of demons. Even when a baby, he didn't meditate to become God. He didn't chant some mantra, perform austerities, and then find out that he was God. No. Even when Krishna is 3 months old, he is all powerful. He's taking this childlike body, but he is all powerful, always. Unlimitedly powerful. We can't even conceive of what that means, but this is what God is. He's unlimitedly powerful regardless of what form he's in. So he's playing like a baby and in a baby-like form, but he doesn't have baby-like powers. Just like when there's a child who's this big, the child has a particular ability based on his body, but then when he grows older, his body changes and his ability changes. One's ability is based on one's body. When one, as I am, seems to be very rapidly becoming, when one gets to be an old man, one loses all the abilities of his body. He loses his abilities, they're born of the body. But Krishna, regardless, regardless of the position of his body, because his body is Satchidananda Vigraha, is a form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Anadiradir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. He remains always Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava. And actually, in the past time we shall hear today, we'll hear how Krishna Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava, everything in existence is resting on just a portion of his incredibly unlimited power. And these pastimes are being spoken by whom? Who's speaking to whom? Sukadev, yes, speaking to Maharaj Prakrit. Because these pastimes, if one has proper consciousness, one can actually realize, experience, associate with Krishna by hearing about him. Therefore, the first verse, first and second verse, Maharaj Prakrit said, very nice verses. Please listen. My Lord, Sukadev Goswami, my Lord, Sukadev Goswami, all the various activities exhibited by the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly pleasing to the ear and to the mind. Simply by hearing of these activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord. Why do we have to hear this philosophy, hear about Krishna in this way or in that way? Why do we have to listen to this? I'd much prefer to hear about what? Oops. Everyone started thinking about what they'd like to hear about instead of about Krishna. But this is the tendency of their mind. And why does the mind want to hear about so many things? We want to hear about the news, we want to hear about the finances, we want to hear about this romance story, that romance story. Why? Because of the desires in our heart. What we want to hear about is based on what we desire. And the desires within the heart, if they are not centered upon realizing the absolute truth, these are actually considered dirty things. Dirty things because they're contaminations or contaminants. And if we have unlimited, someone says, oh, I have so many things. I have unlimited things. But if they're all dirty things, that's a bigger problem. So that is what the material world is like. It's an accumulation of so many dirty, self-centered, selfish desires that will never bring happiness to the heart. We can try, and indeed, we generally do try. We try to fulfill all our desires one after the other. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. And all the people of the world are acting in this way. I want this, I want this. But does anyone actually achieve happiness by gaining what they think that they want? Actually not. But who is intelligent enough, experienced enough, to actually come to this conclusion that it is not possible, even if we took all the desires, everything we could imagine, that only if I had some of this and some of that, only if this, only if that, only if this person would leave me alone, only if that, only if the world would be shaped according to my desire, which is ultimately is what the only ifs come down to, only if I was the controller, if I was God, Ishvara Parama Me. Only if, then everything would be properly organized. But because we're not, Even if we possessed everything and could control everything, there would still be something very deeply lacking from the heart. Who is bold enough to admit this? Who is bold enough to do the research, the scholarly research, by researching all the people who already had, or who have even at this moment, all the things that we desire and are imagining that would make us happy? Research and see if they are happy. See if when they get this disease and that disease, see if they don't have to leave this world kicking and screaming, dying, or their dearest one leaves. Who can be happy in this world? And all those false hopes and desires, they are considered dirty things or contaminations on the heart. But just simply by hearing of these activities of Krishna, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, Maharaj Prickett is speaking, and he's going to die within just a few days. By this time, it's probably 2 days left. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord, but Krishna's childhood activities are so attractive that they are automatically pleasing to the mind and ear. Thus, one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, it vanishes. It's cut at the root. And one gradually develops devotional service to the Supreme Lord, attachment for Him, and friendship with devotees who give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord. This is quite a speech for someone who is about to leave this world in the prime of his life, cursed to die. He's so pure and so elevated already that his heart is blossoming with the desire to hear about Krishna. He could be sitting there lamenting, only if I still could have my kingdom back, only if I wouldn't have to die, only if the person who cursed me, he would die instead of me, only if this and only if that, only if my child was fully grown up, only if this, only if that, only if I could have another 10 years. But he's not possessed by this kind of mood at all. He's eager. There is a spark has begun to flame within his heart, eagerness to hear about Krishna, because he's experiencing Krishna and hearing an exalted person like Sukadeva Goswami speak about Krishna. So please, if you think it fit, if you think I'm qualified, if you will be so merciful to me, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Prema Vavarta, who is the author of Prema Vavarta? Jagadananda Pandit, a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is what he says. Krishna bahimukhaya bhogavanchakari nikatasta maya tare japatiyandhari. Our material existence is maya, or illusion, in which we desire different varieties of material enjoyment and therefore change to different varieties of bodies. Brahmayan savabhutani yantrarudhani maya. Ashanapi kleshara asadeha. As long as we have these temporary bodies, they give us many varieties of tribulations. What does that mean? Who can repeat that in their own words?
Because we have so many different types of bodies.
How many do you have right now?
One.
Yeah, okay.
There's an infinite number of ways we can enjoy ourselves on the material plane.
Yeah, and as long as we have these temporary bodies, note that, we don't eternally have these this body. I long for an eternal situation that's secure and will give me the satisfaction. And I'm looking everywhere for that situation. Brahmayan Savabhutanam. And I'm wandering from one birth to another birth. From dog body to monkey body to king body to learned scholar body to this body, male, female, one to the next, longing, trying to fulfill those desires that are sitting within my heart so deeply. The longings for the desires that I think will fill the will award me the happiness that I so much long for. But temporary bodies, as long as we have these temporary bodies, they give us many varieties of tribulations. We have so many plans, so many desires to fulfill, but what do we actually end up with? Tribulations? What does tribulations mean? What's another word for a tribulation?
Problems,
miseries, one after the next, and they're divided into three different kinds: adiatmika, adibhautika, adidaivika. Adidaivika means the miseries such as the excessive heat, and everyone's saying, oh, I wish it would get cold. Then it gets too cold, of course, and then, oh, I wish it would get warm. I wish it would always be perfect, but it won't be always perfect. This is the material world. There's so many miseries that are beyond one's control, daivi, offered by fate. And then there is the adibhautika miseries. Adibhautika means the miseries born of the body, such as toothaches. Anyone have a toothache today? No. Earache. All those with earaches, raise your hand. Knee aches. Okay, this is it. All right, there's four with knee aches. Headaches. One headache. Okay, we have four earaches. No, four knee aches. One had ankles. Ankles doing tired eyes. Tired eyes, okay. Back, yes, I missed the back. Back, lower back. We'll start with lower backs. Shoulders. Oh, neck. Who has this sore neck? Oh. One after the next. It's unavoidable. It's unavoidable. The older one, the only thing that can stop an old body from giving one tribulations is dying before you get old. And no one's going to take that option. No one's going to long for that one. So these temporary bodies, they give us varieties of tribulations. Adiatmika, adibhautika, adidaivika. This is the root cause of all suffering. But this root cause of all suffering can be removed by revival of our Krishna consciousness. All the Vedic literatures presented by Vyasadeva and other great sages are therefore intended to revive our Krishna consciousness. Get to the root of the problem, which begins to revive with Shravanam Kirtanam. Shravanam Srinvatam Svakata Krishna Bhagavatam, 1st canto, 2nd chapter, 17th verse. Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures exist simply to give us a chance to hear about Krishna. Krishna's different avatars or incarnations, all of which are wonderful and which can arouse one's inquisitiveness. But generally, such avatars as Matsya, Korma, and Varaha are not as attractive as Krishna. First of all, however, we have no attraction for hearing about Krishna, and this is the root cause of our suffering. Very heavy statement. This is the root cause of our suffering. We have no attraction to hear about Krishna. We turn on the radios, we read this, we look at that, simply to avoid Krishna. We don't want to hear about Krishna. It's dry, it's tasteless, because of our hearts are like bamboo, where they're filled with so many, and they're filled with so many other desires. But this is the root cause of the suffering. But Parikshit Maharaj specifically mentions that the wonderful activities of baby Krishna, which amazed Mother Yasoda and the other inhabitants in Braja, are especially attractive. From the very beginning of his childhood, Krishna killed Putana, Trinavarta, and Shakatasura and showed the entire universe within his mouth. Thus the pastimes of Krishna, one after another, kept Mother Yasoda and all the inhabitants of Braja in great astonishment, because this boy was amongst them. And there was something so wonderful about this boy. Of course, we know that wonderful thing about him is that he's the unlimited, supreme, eternal, omniscient personality of Godhead. Sarvakarana Karana. But their love for him was so great that all they knew, practically speaking, is, oh, this boy is so attractive, so wonderful. Look at this wonderful thing he's done. Look at this wonderful thing he's done. Because this is the primary characteristic of God. Secondary characteristics are those where he's dealing in the material world, such as Ishwara, the controller, or the lawgiver, Jehovah, or the creator, or the Paramatma in everyone's heart. These are all having to do with the material world. But these activities of Krishna, these all attractive activities, they're astonishing. Most astonishing. Because, again, the residents of Vrindavan, their love for Krishna was so great, they weren't thinking of him as God, as the the supreme person, the controller. They're just thinking of this wonderful boy who is so amazing. And look at the astonishing thing he does. This beautiful lady who came, and here he is, just a three-month-old baby, so helpless, can't say a word, can only cry at that time, can't even turn over. He doesn't even have the power to turn over on his back. And this beautiful woman, we thought was a beautiful woman, who was so appealing, came to feed him. And suddenly, as she was feeding him, she began to scream, "Leave me, child, leave me." And suddenly her whole form changed, and she ran from the house screaming, and she assumed this huge form and crushed so many trees. And there was this, our boy, our beloved baby. We were terrified that he would be harmed because we love him so much. And there he was, just playing upon this huge demoness. Oh, Krishna's done so many astonishing things. What is astonishing? What is an accomplishment for the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead? To kill a demon? He could blink his eye or wish or flick his finger and a billion demons would be killed. This is just insignificant part of his potency. Universes come from the pores of his skin. He's maintaining, creating, destroying. This is not his Aishwarya. What does Aishwarya mean? His opulence, his power. This is just the sweetness. The residents of Vrindavan, they just simply loved him. And they were so, when they saw him upon Putana, they said, "Oh, Krishna's okay. We can breathe again." The dominant sweetness was in their heart was of love for Krishna. So Prickit Maharaj was hearing this. And he's continuing, wanting to hear more and more from Sukadev. Maharaj Prickit requested him to continue describing Krishna's childhood activities, which are especially easy to hear, which create more and more inquisitiveness. They create a thirst in the heart that rather than being satisfied, like you buy a big fat Sunday newspaper thinking how much pleasure it's going to give you, but after you flick through some pages, there's just a dryness, a dullness, a sadness in the heart. But this type of hearing about Krishna, is like a flame that simply increases in its intensity the more that it is nourished and fed. Third verse. Let me see if there's anything to read by Vishwanath Chakravarti. Yes, he says. Vishwanath Chakravarti comments. Prabhupada gets his comments, seems like from in the 10th canto, mostly from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but sometimes there's some extra little things that either Prabhupada has put in or Vishwanath has put in. But this is what he says, Vishwanath. The seventh chapter, this one, shows the Aishwarya, power and majesty aspect of Krishna's childhood pastimes. Krishna broke the cart after taking his bath and going to sleep. He killed Trinavarta and showed the whole universe to his mother Yasoda. These are the pastimes that will occur in this chapter. By sucking Putana's breast, Krishna showed the power of his lips. In the pastime of demolishing the cart, Krishna showed the power of his feet. And by killing Trinavarta, Krishna showed the power of his hands. He showed his unlimited powers by revealing the universe twice, and this in the next chapter, to his mother. My mind is attracted to the pastimes of Krishna's other avatars. This is a quotation. But I'm especially greedy to hear Krishna's childhood pastimes. With this intent, Parikshit Maharaj speaks this verse. Hearing the pastimes of the different avatars of the Lord fills me with bliss. But if you agree... Oh! It's not mine. Hearing the pastimes of the different avatars of the Lord fills me with bliss. But if you agree, then please speak about those pastimes which will destroy one's apathy and lack of taste for hearing them. Hearing Krishna's transcendental pastimes creates a hankering to hear more, and it purifies the mind of filthy desires. At first, rock candy tastes bitter to a man suffering from jaundice, but eventually one regains the power to taste its sweetness. Similarly, a conditioned soul has no attraction to hearing Harikatha. But continual hearing will quickly produce attachment, a shakti, rati, bhava, and finally prema. What does prema mean?
Love
for Krishna. In the beginning, one will develop friendship with Krishna's devotees, and at the stage of prema, one will feel love for all living beings. Hearing anything about Bhagawan Sri Krishna gradually rids one of indifference to hearing about the Lord and helps one attain prema. What's that? Don't they have any that go bum 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 bum? But hearing the pastimes of Krishna's childhood quickly brings about Krishna prema. Third text. Please describe, Maharaj Parikshit continues, other pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared on this planet Earth imitating a human child and performing wonderful activities like killing Putana. Prabhupada's purport. Maharaj Parikshit requested Sukadeva Goswami to narrate other childhood pastimes exhibited by Krishna while playing as a human child. The Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnates at different times and different planets and universes, and according to the nature of those places, he exhibits his unlimited potency. That a child sitting on the lap of his mother was able to kill the gigantic Putana is extremely wonderful for the inhabitants of this planet. But on other planets, the inhabitants are more advanced, and therefore the pastimes of the Lord performs there are still more wonderful, meaning that they are more powerful. Krishna's appearance on this planet like a human being makes us more fortunate than the demigods on the higher planets. And therefore Maharaj Prickett was very much interested in hearing about him. It means that Krishna's pastime, because just like if someone walked in here who was very, very, very strong and he picked up 1,000 pounds like this, we would all go, oh. But if he was in a place where there were tens and tens of people as strong as him, he did that and everyone wasn't very astonishing at all. So in the realms, the higher realms of this world, to do something wonderful, Krishna does more, his pastimes are filled more with this Aishwarya, his power. Because so many of his incarnations can kill a demon, so many, like Putana, so many demigods can kill demons, Rakshasis. But Krishna did it in such a way, not the most awe-inspiring thing, but a way that would evoke the great loving sentiments of his parents. And that is the speciality of Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. It evokes love, deep, deep, deep love. So Maharaj Prickett was very interested to hear. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's short comment. In his enthusiasm, Prickett repeats his request to clarify his intention. He says it again. I want to hear about Krishna. I want to hear about Krishna. Being requested by mankind, the Lord appeared on earth rather than being requested by demigods and appearing on Swarga. In this way, Sri Krishna especially blessed the humans on earth. Text 4. Sukadev Goswami says, when Mother Yasoda's baby was slanting his body in an attempt to rise and turn around, what does that mean? This attempt was observed by a Vedic ceremony. What is that? What does the baby do? He slants his body. Any mothers remember this? Eric, close the door. It pushes up on his hands like this, and he's trying to turn over, he's trying to move. So Krishna did this. He just had the incredible power, which was just the smallest element of his power, to kill Putana, and here he's trying to turn over. He's lacking the ability to turn over. I remember when my Lalita Manjari was 1.5 years old when we were in Melbourne. When she was at the Esplanade in Melbourne, and she was sitting there, and suddenly she stood up for the first time, and she went, ah, look what, do you remember that?
Yes.
She was so, look what I did. She couldn't speak yet. She went, ah, look what, and the parents feel so much happiness like that, and so much affection for the child. This is what Krishna is doing. Even though he's unlimitedly powerful, what to speak of being able to like turn over or stand up or run or anything, he's unlimitedly powerful at every time. He can assume any form he likes even. But he's doing this to give his parents and the other elderly residents of Vrindavan to intensify their maternal and paternal affection, especially the mothers. They love these type of thing. So they, in the Vedic culture, this attempt was observed by a Vedic ceremony. There was a samskara for that. And such a ceremony called uttana. Uttana means the going up, which is performed when a child is due to leave the house for the first time. The child is properly bathed. So Krishna, up to this time, he hadn't left the house. He's bathed and then he leaves the house. Just after Krishna turned 3 months old, Mother Yasoda celebrated this ceremony with other women of the neighborhood. On that day, there was a conjunction of the moon with the constellation Rohini. As the brahmanas joined by chanting Vedic hymns and professional musicians also took part, this great ceremony was observed by Mother Yasoda.
How old was he?
It says here, 3 months old. This is probably right after Putana. Prabhupada's purport is very, very heavy, actually. Prabhupada at times will expand the sweetness of Krishna's Leela, and at other times he'll contrast Krishna's Leela, which took place within the Vedic culture, with the contemporary civilization. Listen to what Prabhupada says. There is no question of overpopulation or of children being a burden for their parents in the Vedic society. Such a society is so well organized and people are so advanced in spiritual consciousness that childbirth is never regarded as a burden or a botheration. The more a child grows, the more his parents become jubilant, and the child's attempt to turn over are also a source of jubilation. Even before the child is born, when the mother is pregnant, many recommended ritualistic ceremonies are performed. For example, when the child has been within the womb for 3 months and for 7 months, there is a ceremony the mother observes by eating with neighborhood children. The ceremony is called Svada Bhakshana. Similarly, before the birth of the child, there is the Gobadan ceremony. In Vedic civilization, here's where Prabhupada... So now he's talking about how people... family life was a source of happiness in the Vedic culture. The families were stable. And now Prabhupada's going... And everything, the children brought so much happiness to the parents. And ceremonies were performed at every step that would... express the happiness of the parents, impress wonderful things within the child's consciousness as well. Very auspicious ceremonies. Now, Prabhupada now turns to the other side. In contrast, in Vedic civilization, childhood or pregnancy is never regarded as a burden. Rather, it is a cause of jubilation. In contrast, people in modern civilization do not like pregnancy or childbirth. But when there is a child, they sometimes kill it. We can think of that. It sounds so crude. The child is there and they kill it. And now they're trying to pass this legislation in the United States that if someone commits a crime to a pregnant lady, they get the crime of doing it twice. Once to the lady and one to the unborn child. And a double case of murder can be, if they kill a pregnant lady, they can bring double murder charges against them. And yet, they're killing so many children in the womb. But they don't call that killing. What do they call it?
Abortion,
yeah. So this is great hypocrisy of the contemporary so-called civilization. And Prabhupada, he would almost always say so-called civilization. When there's a child, they sometimes kill it. They actually do that. They kill the children. Previously, the mother has so much love for the child. And even today, the mothers have so much love. But everything is a botheration. Bringing up children is a botheration. Because everyone is so self-centered and everyone's consciousness is so disturbed, everything is a botheration. So they kill the child. They kill the cows, they kill sheep, they kill children, unborn children. So Prabhupada continues, we can just consider how human society has fallen since the inauguration of Kali Yuga. Although people still claim to be civilized, at the present moment there is actually no human civilization, but only an assembly of two-legged animals, like snakes and tigers. They kill their children as soon as they're born. They'll eat them. But this is different from what is really being spoken of. What's really being spoken of is the wonderful jubilation of Braja. When Krishna is born and growing up, a Prabhupada is pointing out that here and now we shouldn't become enamored by this civilization. We should not become enamored. Its promise is pleasure, but it delivers things like this. Hard-hearted cruelty, killing one's own child in the womb. And can people be happy when such things are going on? How can one be peaceful? The mothers, they do things like this, they kill it, they have an abortion, and then 10, 20 years later they're suffering from the psychological effects from having done something so horrible. These things don't sit in the consciousness because everyone knows, especially the mother knows how cruel and sinful it is, how wrong it is. Because the sentiments are there, naturally. Anyway. Text 5. So Prabhupada did not want us to be enamored by contemporary civilization because it will lead us the wrong way. Text 5. After completing the bathing ceremony for the child, Mother Yasoda received the brahmanas by worshipping them with proper respect and giving them ample food, grains and other edibles, clothing, desirable cows and garlands. The Brahmins properly chanted Vedic hymns to observe the auspicious ceremony, and when they finished and Mother Yasoda saw that the child felt sleepy, she lay down on the bed with the child until he was peacefully sleeping. Purport. An affectionate mother takes great care of her child and is always anxious to see that the child is not disturbed even for a moment. As long as the child wants to remain with the mother stays with the child, and the child feels very comfortable. Mother Yasoda saw that her child felt sleepy, and to give him all facilities for sleep, she lay down with the child, and when he was peaceful, she got up to attend her other household affairs. The liberal, this is text 6, the liberal Mother Yasoda, absorbed in celebrating the Uttana ceremony when the child goes out of the house. And this is a civilization. There's so much love in the families. The mother, the child is brought up with so much love and affection. So much love and affection. They feel so secure and safe and loved and happy. And psychologically stable because of that proper upbringing, that it was impossible for them to, almost impossible for the children to take the spiritual life, because they couldn't get free from their family entanglements, because there was so much love binding everyone. But in today's society, that's the positive side of the insanity, that everyone is so miserable that they can leave the family behind to take the spiritual life. In the Vedic culture, it's almost impossible. There was one of the temple president in Gujarat of the Ahmedabad temple, he told me there were no brahmacharis joining. So he said, the people here, their family, because Gujarat is a very pious place. By nature, everyone is vegetarian. There's so many temples everywhere, and the families are so close. So he said, Even in their dal they put sugar. So how can anyone leave the family? Because sugar means sweetness. The point was that everything is so sweet. How can they leave their family and take the spiritual life? Even their dal they put sugar. There's sweetness in all the deal. It's mundane, it's temporary. And all, there's so much preaching has to be about that you have to leave the family life. But in Kali Yuga, everywhere else, not like that at all. Or sour grapes. So this is culture. Where it's sweet, even the dealing, all the dealings are very sweet. So when he was peaceful, she saw he was peaceful, she got up to tend to her other household affairs. The liberal Mother Yasoda, absorbed in celebrating the Uttana ceremony, was busy receiving guests, worshipping them with all respect and offering them clothing, cows, garlands, and grains. Thus she could not hear the child crying for his mother. At that time, the child Krishna, demanding to drink the milk of his mother's breast, angrily threw his legs upward. So he was put, actually, as Prabhupada will explain, as the text explained, she put him under a cart to protect him from the sun, and there was a mattress down there of some sort, and she put him there, and he was just resting, Krishna. He was sleepy, he fell asleep, and then she put him under the cart for protection, and then Krishna woke up, and he wanted his mother, and he began to cry. And his mother couldn't hear him because she was distracted by the ceremony. And Krishna became angry and he began to kick his legs. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Krishna had been placed underneath the household handcart, but this handcart was actually another form of the Shakatasura, a demon who had come there to kill the child. So he had assumed that form. Now, on the plea of demanding to suck his mother's breast, Krishna took this opportunity to kill the demon. Thus he kicked Shakatasura just to expose him. Although Krishna's mother was engaged in receiving guests, Lord Krishna wanted to draw her attention by killing the Shakatasura, and therefore he kicked that cart-shaped demon. So Krishna's kick, he's just this 3-month-old baby. Did you ever get kicked? Can you imagine what it's like to be kicked by a 3-month-old baby? I mean, there's nothing. There's no muscles. But he kicked the cart and suddenly, because again, Krishna is all powerful. And when Krishna performs his activities, on one side they are to give pleasure to those who love him, and on the other side, he accomplishes so many other things. He kills this Shakatasura, this demon. These narrations are wonderfully enjoyable, and those who are fortunate are struck with wonder upon hearing these extraordinary activities of the Lord. Although the less intelligent regard them as mythological because a dull brain cannot understand them, they are real facts. These narrations are actually so enjoyable and enlightening that Maharaj Prickett and Sukadeva Goswami took pleasure in them, and other liberated persons following in their footsteps become fully jubilant by hearing about the wonderful activities of the Lord. How is this wonderful again? Because this supreme, all-powerful person, and we usually, when people think of God, you know, they think of that, you know, if you've ever been to the Sistine Chapel in Rome, you know, there's unlimited paintings and rugs of God. You never see God, but there's always a light in the corner, and you know, and the people are all awed and reverential. So this all-powerful, supreme person to give pleasure to his devotees, and this is ultimately his supreme form, his form of pleasure, he assumes this childlike form But yet he's always all powerful. He's still the creator, but that's just by a tiny, insignificant part of his energy. And look what he does for his pleasure. He engages in these activities, these wonderful, extraordinary, seemingly simple activities in Vrindavan to exchange love with those who love him most. Krishna has no desires because he has no lack. But his desire is to exchange love with his great devotees. Naturally. And therefore, a wealthy person who has unlimited money, practically speaking, where does he get his pleasure from? Not from buying things, but from those who he can really trust and love. And he separates out all those. You become very wealthy people, they become expert. Because everyone is nice to a wealthy person because they want his money. They want to get close to him. They want something from him. And they become very, very, very sensitive to who's coming. Who's coming and to kill, to take. And who's actually has affection. So Krishna knows everyone's heart too. Who comes to Krishna to take and who actually learns to love him. And if one actually, by hearing about Krishna, the love, because there's so many mixed motives in our hearts and minds, the love will become dominant the more we hear about Krishna. So Vishwanath Chakravarti, we read 6. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will read his short comment. After being honored by gifts of rice, this is 6. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, because Yasoda was busy exchanging pleasantries and giving ornaments, garlands, chandan, oil, and sindoor to the village ladies who had assembled for the festival, she did not hear Krishna crying from hunger upon his waking. In anger, Krishna kicked his legs upward while thinking, since you cannot hear my crying, maybe the sound of the cart breaking will catch your attention. Just see. Krishna has enough power to create an ocean of milk. But his mother loves to feed him milk so much he won't take milk except from her breast. He has the power to kick the cart, and he has the power to gain her attention in any way he wants. He's in her heart. He can just dictate. But all these are wonderful pastimes that are expressly designed to increase the loving ecstasy of the residents of Vrindavan. So here's how Krishna chose to get his mother's attention and kill the demon. He kicked the cart with his tender lotus feet, and the cart went flying. Lord Krishna was lying down underneath the hand cart in one corner of the courtyard, and although his little legs were as soft as leaves, when he struck the cart with his legs, it turned over violently and collapsed. The wheels separated from the axle. The hubs and spokes fell apart. He kicked it with his tender leaf-like feet, and the whole thing fell apart. And the pole of the handcart broke. On the cart there were many little utensils made of various metals, and all of them scattered hither and thither. Prabhupada's purport. He's quoting Vishwanath from this. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented on this verse as follows. When Lord Krishna was of a very tender age, his hands and legs resembled soft new leaves. So soft, the new leaf, it's frilled, it's greenish and red, so tender and soft. That was Krishna's lotus-like limbs, the childlike limbs, so soft and tender. Yet simply by touching the hand cart with his legs, he made the cart fall to pieces. It was quite possible for him to act in this way, and yet not exert himself very much. The Lord in his Vamana avatar had to extend his foot to the greatest height to penetrate the covering of the universe. And when the Lord killed the gigantic demon Hiranyakashipu, he had to assume the special bodily feature of Nrisingadev. But in his Krishna avatar, the Lord did not need to exert such energy. He did everything from his beautiful, tender, lotus-like form. Therefore, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. In other incarnations, the Lord had to exert some energy according to the time and circumstances, but in his form, in this form, he exhibited unlimited potency. When he was Nrisingadev, he assumed the appropriate form to exhibit such terrible potency. But in this form of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he exhibited all the potencies he wanted to without changing his form at all. Because all the potencies of the Lord are eager to serve him continuously. So this was an opportunity of his powerful foot potency to serve him. So thus the handcart collapsed, its joints broken, and all the metal pots and utensils scattered. The Vaishnava Toshini, that's Sanatana Goswami's commentary, remarks that although the handcart was higher than the child, now listen to this part, and we hear what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, how he explains this point. The handcart was higher than the child could easily touch the wheel of the cart. And this was sufficient to send the demon down to the earth. The Lord simultaneously pushed the demon to the earth and superficially broke the handcart. Here's what Vishwanath says about that. The cart was struck by his soft lotus feet as if with very little force. To break the cart, Krishna did not extend his foot high upward like Vamanadev in the breaking of the shell of the universe. Nor did Krishna's feet become hard like Lord Nrisingadev's nails to tear apart the hard body of Hiranyakashipu. This rare display of power by Krishna, which does not contradict the sweetness of his childhood pastimes, shows the completeness of Sri Krishna in Vrindavan. The cart fell upside down, and the utensils of gold and silver scattered everywhere. The wheel and axles fell apart, and the steering pole broke. The Brahmanda Purana states that because a heavy demon entered the cart, the wheels sank in the earth, and the cart's height decreased. Thus Krishna's short baby legs could touch the cart. Just to the... Immediately, everything went flying everywhere. Loud sound. Now just imagine, and we won't hear about it now, but tomorrow Krishna willing, we shall continue and complete this pastime. A great festival is going on because Krishna has just stood up and he's killed one demon already who tried to kill him, Putana. And Mother Yasoda saw that Krishna was asleep, so she put him under this cart and she went around in the happy, auspicious festival. And suddenly, what is the sound that was heard? The tumult, the crashing of the utensils and dishes and plates, gold and silver flying everywhere. The cart gets knocked over just where Krishna is underneath. It's knocked over, all broken, as if hit by a powerful force. Utensils smashing, clattering. Just like sometimes in the kitchen, the dishes, you know, the plates or something, or the pots fall over and everyone, what happened? So big tumult, and all the residents of Vrindavan, especially Mother Yasoda and the other, they're there. And suddenly, how do you think they're feeling? Huh?
Not
great. Huh?
Not great.
Yes, Krishna. Krishna was underneath that cart. Immediately, fear and anxiety for Krishna awakens in their heart based on their love for him. So their love for him takes on a different form of ecstasy, of anxiety for him. Because that's the way parents always are. They're always in anxiety about their children. When their children, even if the parent is 90 years old and the child is 70 years old, the parents will always be in anxiety about their children because they always must see their children as little. And this is only because they love them. If they didn't love them, there would be no anxiety. No one's in anxiety about other people's children. It's their own children they're in anxiety because they love them. So that is reflected in this world from Krishna. And in the spiritual world, this causes the greatest of ecstasy. Because the love, it's like when the waves come in the ocean. You know, there's a big storm. The waves start to rise and become higher. So similarly, this type of anxiety causes great waves of love to rise in the heart of Mother Yasoda and the other beloved elderly members. But Sisi Gornatai Ki Jai, Krishna Lila Ki Jai, Lila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Vishnu Sakavati Chakra Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Kal. So we'll hear more from these pastimes tomorrow, Krishna willing.